Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to do the TSP Roth Basics, 101 type information, just to get people familiar with and better able to listen to next week's show when the big guns come in. We have the director of the thrift, the director of external affairs, and a thrift tax attorney. So next week, we're going to answer the heavy-duty questions, but it won't be all heavy-duty. It'll just be an insight. They'll have things they want to talk about, and we'll have things we want to talk about. But this morning, we're just going to deal with the basics. And to guide me in the proper path and to provide questions as well as answers, John Elliott, retired federal employee, retired benefits speaker, knower of all things federal. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Bob.
And what do you call you? You have a great term for that, federal benefit strategist.
Yes. I avoid the term specialist, but strategist, because, you know, a lot of this retirement planning, which is what we do present in our seminars, is retirement planning, is strategy. And we do talk strategy a lot, so I don't think it's totally inappropriate in that. Yet I also noticed years ago, having lived here almost 30 years, that there you have Republican and Democratic strategists on TV all the time coming out of the woodwork. And so I thought I'd just join that strategy group, although I'm nonpartisan. So federal employee, federal benefits strategist, I think, is
that's perfect.
Suits me anyway.
Okay, so our strategy this morning, we'll start off, and there was an article in the Washington Post just this past week, and I'll very briefly discuss it, and it's been discussed many times before on this station as well as other places. There's a lack of participation that's greater than what you would anticipate for people that would get matching funds that go into the thrift. In other words, you can put in X dollars, and if you put in enough, they'll match up to the first five. I mean, that's free money. And there's a quote here from Greg Long, the director of the thrift, executive director of the thrift. Basically, they're leaving free money on the table. I like that. So it's 100% rate of return for that, and that's true whether you're in the traditional TSP or the Roth TSP. It's nice. But of course, it's also if you're FERS.
Right.
CSRS need not apply.
Right. They should contribute because it's always good to save and invest for retirement. It's just extra money. And the vast majority, as I recall from looking at statistics years ago, of CSRS and offset people, the offset people earn essentially under CSRS rules, so they don't get matching either. But they do contribute heavily in large numbers because it's good to save and invest for retirement.
Okay. And just this morning on Federal News Radio, now this is the email version, gentleman Jack Moore, I'm going to have to say hi to him after the show, and he wrote, five things Fed should know about the Roth TSP. It's an easy read. I'm sure there's lots of other things out there, but of course, Fed News Radio only prints the best, so that somebody might want to look at that that's unfamiliar with it, and I'm not so sure that it's just a little bit over two pages, and we'll go through that in a little bit. But why don't we just set up the Roth TSP by first talking about the traditional TSP. Now, let's just forget whether we're FERS or CSRS. And what is a traditional versus a Roth, we'll get to that. But I think the best place to start is way back when with the IRA, so everybody can look at this. People that go way back, people that don't go back as far, and the newbies. If you have what's called earned income for the listening audience is generally salary, but if they're retired, they could have a wage. They could have a small business profit, and there's a fourth one called alimony income. But let's not try to remember that. Let's try to remember that you have to have earned income to put money into an IRA. When it first started, it was immaterial how much one made. You got a tax deduction. I remember when it started, long time ago, 1975.
I remember when it ended.
And I said, this can't be true. They're going to give me a tax deduction to put money in a savings account. And that's back then, that's all you did with it. You know, mutual funds and stocks were, you know, you knew what stocks were, but you didn't buy that. You bought a savings account in an FDIC place. And then as time went on, it became very popular. Now, I'm not saying Congress killed the tax benefit for it, but they severely wounded it starting in 86. You could still put money, and it's very key here, you could still put money into your IRA and you could still have it grow, but the contribution would not be deductible if your income exceeded a certain level. Now, in 1986, maybe everyone wasn't affected by that, but as people aged, and that's a lot of our population, it's not all of our population, they found that their income on their return was greater than what would allow a deduction. But the key was they could still put money into the traditional IRA, which is very key that we'll get to later on in the show. The earnings would still be tax sheltered until they came out. So again, let's look at the term traditional, but now traditional IRA, because it's been around so long. It allowed you a tax deduction, or maybe not, and the earnings were deferred until some later date. Along comes 1997, and Congress introduces into the law a Roth IRA. But here's the provision here. You're not going to deduct it. You're just not. Doesn't make any difference what your income is. If you put money into a Roth IRA, you can't deduct it when the money goes in. But when it comes out, after it meets some other test we'll talk about later, then you would not pay taxes on anything coming out of it. Nice. And then Congress further said, well, this is good for the bulk of the people, but for those that make more than X, and X changes depending on how you file a return, I don't want to do that with numbers. You can still put, you can't put money into a Roth IRA. Can't do it. Non, zero, nada.
Their income limits.
Their income limits.
Right.
But if you had put money into it prior to this crossover point, then it could stay, but you just couldn't add money to it. Now, there's ways to get money into a Roth IRA that go beyond today's show, even if you make over the amount, and it's certainly legal. But we've done a show on that, but we should do that. We should not do that today because, again, today is basics. Okay, so we have a traditional IRA at its inception, tax deductible. Still is tax deductible for some folks, but not for many once they're late mid-career, early pre-retirement.
Well, wasn't, let me ask this question, wasn't the reason, I remember myself up to roughly 1986 when the tax reform occurred, that I could deduct my IRA contributions, which is one reason I had an IRA. But then they changed it so if you were under a defined benefit plan like FERS or CERS, if you're a Fed, you could no longer deduct your IRA, correct?
That's true. And that excuse me, that definition would extend to the TSP as well. The
right.
TSP would knock it out if it weren't for the
right.
defined benefit.
In 1987, in April of 1987, you could begin contributing to the new Thrift Savings Plan, which it was a traditional plan, meaning it was pre-tax, but you got this tax deduction. So what I did when that I started contributing in those days, CSRS, which was what I was, were maxed at 5% of your salary you could put in. But I put in the 5% because I said, heck, I get 5% taken off my taxes. And then later I discovered the miracle of compounding interest and was even more pleased that I always contributed to the max that I could each year, and it gradually rose. But that's sort of the history of the traditional IRA deduction versus the TSP deduction that effectively replaced it a few months later.
Well put. Couldn't have said it better. So the IRA example, let's just file that away. But remember the term traditional, and as John mentioned, then all of a sudden in 1986, right after they kind of shut the door on the deductible IRA, And kind of about the same time FERS was coming on, they said, here, you can put money into this thing called a 401k in the private sector, but in the government, it's the TSP. And actually, the TSP version is better than the 401k version, but we won't go into that. All righty, so you're entitled to do this, and you can deduct the amount, and it's a significant amount. What's if you're not 50, in other words, if you're under 50, you can put in, what's that number?
This year?
Yeah.
You can put in up to $17,000.
Yeah.
And, a number of years ago, I forget the exact year, but they stopped limiting you to percentages, and then everybody, SERS, FERS, SERS offset, could put in up to the IRS elective deferral limit, which means, in this case, $17,000 this year. Every so often they raise it $500 or $1,000.
Which they did last year.
It was static for a few years at $16,500, and this year it went up $500 to $17,000.
And if you're
the year you turn 50, you can be 54, but if you turn 55 by no later than December 31st, you can contribute an extra $5,500 on top of the $17,000. So you could be doing, if you're 50 plus, $22,500 this year. And I imagine quite a number of feds do that. Certainly they would be older feds. Obviously, they'd be 50, but they'd also be higher salaried typically too. But I bet you there's a fairly significant number of people who do the max, and that's great.
Okay.
You can do it. That's terrific.
So the point being now is we have something called a TSP that comes into play in 1986. We'll leave kind of the IRA discussions alone. But do remember, with regards to the IRA, we mentioned the term traditional and Roth. Okay, so now we have the TSP. When it first came out, it wasn't really called anything. It was called the TSP. Now, effective today, it's the traditional TSP. Why? Because effective today, May 7th, 2012, they launched the Roth TSP. Alrighty, so the traditional TSP, deductible, as you put the money into, as John laid out, the dollar amounts. Let's leave the dollar amounts alone for just a second. But the money that goes in is tax deductible. The change then, there was a call to say, listen, in the private sector, they have something called a 401k plan, and they have a Roth 401k plan. Like the Roth IRA, the money that would go into it would not be deductible, but the money coming out of it, after it meets some tests now, would not be taxable. So now, today, when we go to put money in, we say, gee, do we stay with the traditional, where I'd get a tax deduction? Or do I go with the Roth, where I don't get a tax deduction, but I pay tax later? Now, let's make this really simplistic. You're going to pay the tax person sooner or later. It's a given. So now it's your decision. Do you pay the tax person up front by putting money into a Roth TSP, or do you pay the tax person later when you take the money out of the traditional TSP? You're going to pay tax one way or the other. So what's most tax efficient? That's a discussion for next week. In other words, am I going to be in a lower bracket when I retire or leave federal service? Am I going to be in a higher? Gee, if I put the money in, what if I need it? Can I borrow from it? We'll hit some of that today. But that's the huge difference. The Roth, if you put the money in, you're going to pay the taxes up front, but you will never pay the taxes again.
And it may, the decision to do Roth versus traditional or some combination thereof may also be age-based, too. If you're a younger employee, you know, that may influence your decision about whether you go Roth or traditional.
Okay, let's take a look at that. Who would be attracted to this, where taxes maybe aren't an issue, and that would be a newly hired or somebody new into the force that doesn't make as much as they're going to make later. They're going to be in a lower tax bracket, so the fact that they have to pay the tax isn't as sensitive to somebody that's maybe pre-retirement and making more money.
Right.
Or somebody
in particularly, or in a two-earning family, that have a high income. There are a lot of, and most, I would guess, federal employees who are married have both spouses are working. I mean, that's just the numbers.
Right.
We know that. And so that can lead to a relatively high family income or taxable income. So, but if you've got a single person, and you feel free to correct me, as soon as this thing was announced, I thought, well, a younger person, particularly single, as you point out, maybe their income isn't as high as it will be years later. Gee, if you can put that money in a Roth, even though you don't get the tax deduction, and you're going to be FERS, obviously, when you retire years and years down the road, it always sounded really nice to me that money would come out tax-free. And
all right, so let's keep drilling with this.
I mean, that appeals to me on some emotional level. I don't know why, but and financial planner might disagree with me, and we're caveat that somehow.
If we were both 30 or 40 years younger, we might be, I'll catch up with that later. But we don't want to follow that thought process.
The thing I would say is if the only way, if you could afford to contribute more because you got the immediate tax deduction, I think then you would go traditional. If that was the decision point, well, I can contribute more money if I'm getting a reduction in taxes, then maybe you want to do that.
I don't know. I would say the beginning career, and I know you cannot make a statement, you as a general term, not you, John, that would be generally applicable to everyone. But a general comment would be the younger you are, the lower the tax bracket you're going to be in if you're recently hired. And if you put your money into the Roth TSP, it will grow for the remainder of your career, whether it's here, there, or somewhere else. And when it comes out, it's going to be tax-free. However, because you are a new employee, you will get an agency match because you'll be covered under FERS. That agency match does not go into the Roth TSP. It can't. By law, it can't.
Right.
It has to go into the traditional. So that money will be, if you will, non-taxable to the individual. They will pay tax on the other money that goes into the Roth TSP. So right away, you got both. You got the traditional and the Roth. I'm not trying to drive people crazy with this, but I would like to start out at the beginning of one's career. Now, you'd say, well, why would that be so important to them? Well, a lifetime of the miracle of compounding to be tax-free, paid at a lower rate when you first start, is pretty hard to beat. Although somebody did email me and say, well, what if that younger person then needs to buy or wants to buy a house, and they understand that they can take money out to buy a house.
Which is a horrible idea.
Well, listen, horrible idea or not, let's focus in on the question. All righty, so could they take it out? And the answer is, let's say that they could for the sake of argument, but would they want to? And that's where John says it's a horrible idea because you just shot the miracle of compounding.
Any financial planner I've ever heard has said, don't borrow from your retirement plan, whether it's your 401k, and that would also apply to your TSP. Yes, you can take out a loan for 15 years for a purchase of a primary residence, or I guess improvement of a primary residence, not your beach house if that's not your prime, but your primary residence. But and you can take out a loan for any purpose payable. You pay it back in 5 years. So the primary residential loan is 15 years. The general purpose loan, just for any reason, no documentation. You don't have to tell them what you're doing it for, is a five-year loan.
Okay. So the point being is if a younger person started with the Roth TSP, they could do this, but they probably shouldn't.
Yeah,
they just get the money in there. So then let's talk about what happens to the money. You can invest it within the funds. Now, it's interesting here. If you're brand new, it's kind of a mirror. Whatever you do in the one, you do in the other. They follow each other lockstep. So money that went into the traditional TSP because they're FERS and they get the match, whatever they move around, they move around in lockstep. And you'd say, okay, but when does that stop? Well, I don't know that it stops, but if I had to guess, when somebody's income starts to go above a certain level, they may, in fact, not want to do this. And why would they not want to do this? Because the tax rate goes up. I'm just saying this could be an argument about doing it for their entire career. And it probably also gives me a point to get off the subject and answer the phone because we have a phone call. Good morning.
Good morning.
Fire away, please.
Well, it seems that I guess this seems more like for the younger person. I'm about 5 years away from retirement eligibility. Do you think the Roth TSP makes sense for someone like me? And by the way, thank you for the radio program. This is such a benefit for us.
Well, thank you. Thanks for listening. It's a great question. So let's fast forward a little bit with that. We're 5 years from retirement. And we've been putting money in the traditional TSP only because that's the only place it could go. But today we can put money into the Roth. So the first question is a minor technical one. Can you switch mid-year from one to the other? And the answer is yes.
Because this would be mid-year, obviously.
Yeah, right. But you know, some people have said, well, you have to wait till the end of the year. Now you could do it mid-year. But the question that the caller had was actually very good. I don't have that long to go. How much money can I get into it? Well, you can get a substantial amount of money in it if you have 5 years, and you can afford to put that kind of money in. But at her age, I'm sure she's young, but she's 5 years from retirement, so she could be 50, I suppose, John, right? Or she could be older.
But yes, she could be that age, yeah.
But the point being is that she may be in a high bracket. However, for those 5 years, 4 years, 3 years, whatever it might be, she'll be able to fully fund her Roth TSP, and it will be non-taxable for the rest of her life, assuming she leaves it in there for at least 5 years. That's too hard to determine.
And if when she in 5 years when she retires or yeah. whenever, if she's in a lower tax bracket, wouldn't that?
5 years or 59 and a half, whichever is later.
Right.
So in her case,
right.
at 50, it could
you
be
You have
bad.
To keep it in 5 years, and you have to be 59 and a half to take the money out. But I get what I'm asking, or you as the tax expert, is if she is in retirement, if she's not going to work, and she may drop a bracket. She may not, depending if she's CERS or FERS. But if she's FERS, she may drop a tax bracket unless she goes out and gets a job. Wouldn't it argue tax-wise to do the Roth?
It's a screaming yes at that point.
Oh, I thought so.
Yes, yes. So in other words, you put it in at higher bracket, and then you take it out at a lower bracket. So it would seem to make some sense,
mm-hmm.
an awful lot of sense. But the point being is, can you do it, and should you do it? My answer is yes. There's another thing even beyond what she asked, and it may get into next week's not 101 and 102 Roth TSP, but if you can transfer the Roth TSP to a Roth IRA, which you can't do it in reverse, but you can do that. If she had a Roth IRA, then the five-year holding period maybe isn't as sensitive if the Roth has been around for at least 5 years, the Roth IRA. Now, that gets out there a little bit from today's discussion, but it would be a pretty slick move. And I could take a segue to that, too, for those that have not never had a Roth IRA. It might behoove them in their planning to somehow figure out how to get something into one. Discussion of another day, but we spend a fair amount of time in class talking about that. But let's get back to our question. I'm close to retirement. Should I do it? And I believe the answer is yes, unless the taxation just will grate them, because now they're going to have to pay tax. And let's use a numerical example. Let's say that she's close to her, she's funding it, let's do it with even numbers, $10,000 or $20,000. And let's say her combined federal and state tax bracket is 33%. Let's just say that. So the $10,000 that she was putting into the traditional, she really didn't put in $10,000 because she got a tax benefit for it. So the tax benefit helped her to be able to put more money into it. If she puts that same $10,000 into a Roth TSP, there is no tax benefit. So the money's got to come from someplace to make up for it. And that could be the rub, but people need to understand that. When you get up to a higher number, like $20,000, if she was putting $20,000 in, she was actually saving one-third of that in taxes, close to $7,000. But if she puts it into the Roth, she won't save that seven. That's got to. So it's kind of hard to do at that point because now you got a lot going into the Roth DSP and your taxes are going up because you're paying taxes. Remember, you're going to pay them sooner or later. It's your choice. In this case, you're paying them sooner because the deal is I'm willing to pay the taxes up front, not to pay the taxes in arrears. That makes sense?
Yes.
Okay, John, you're looking at me like, what are you talking about?
No, and you can, even though you can noodle this through, the tax stuff, to some extent as a layman, you can get confused. So it's, maybe you ought to see a tax professional. When I was considering a Roth, this was not a Roth TSP. After we retired, we opened up a Roth from our VC account. We won't get off in those weeds, but we did. And, you know, that I think was a fairly good idea because we have all these, you know, the traditional TSP and all of that. But my accountant, my tax advisor, said, well, why would you do that? I mean, not that it was a horrible idea, but she's saying, well, this or that, you know, no, you're not, it's not a really big deal. But so my point is that maybe you ought to see a tax professional. You'd agree with that, right, as a tax professional?
But of course, or listen to this show. Now, this show is archived at NITPINC.com. So will next show, next week's. And I know a fair number of agencies run it through their intranets, and this is a great primer on the basics. And next week is going to be a great, you know, the tougher questions that have come in. And we've had easily 100 emails knowing what was coming up. But anyway, let's get back
you
to...
You know, one thing we haven't mentioned, which we should, is unlike the Roth IRA, the Roth TSP, there are no income limits. So, you know, you hire salaried federal employees that always exceeded the income limits and said, oh, it's too bad I can never contribute to a Roth IRA. They can contribute to the Roth TSP because there's no income limits. So that's right. A big plus.
It's a huge plus. And yeah. So for somebody who's never had one, even late in the career like her caller, I think there would be a really nice idea. Usually at the beginning of the career, income is not an issue with the Roth IRA. But let's stay with the Roth TSP and the traditional. So now you'd say, okay, fine. I'm mid-career. I've got some more money. Maybe I'm in a higher bracket. Maybe the Roth isn't for me. Maybe the traditional is because I'll save more money and I've already got a bedrock of the Roth TSP. It's a nice strategy. I'm not saying that's the way to go, but it kind of answers both questions. And then the caller couldn't have hit it at a better time. As you get into the latter part of the career, if you've never had a Roth before, maybe because your income is too high, maybe because today's the first day that you could, even though you have a short period of time, it would seem initially to make some sense with not knowing anything else about the caller. I know somebody's going to email me and say, how can you say that? I'm not saying it's for everybody. It's just a comment, and I'm building on the question. Now, at the end of the proverbial day, what if you don't want to leave the money in the TSP, whether it's a traditional TSP, whether it's a Roth TSP, and you want to move it into a traditional IRA or a Roth IRA? Can you do that? Or can you move it into a new employer's 401k if you go in there?
So you can do all of those things.
You can do all those things. My comment was, you're not locked into this. So if you do invest in it and you like what it does for you, but you feel that either you could do better or you want more flexibility, then it's not mandatory that it stays in there after you leave.
No, and, you know, yes, you just let's take the flexibility issue with a an IRA as opposed to leaving it in the TSP, yes, you have far infinitely more investment choices, well beyond the 10 that you're limited to in the thrift savings. I mean, it's virtually infinite. But also more flexibility when you decide to withdraw the money. You have far more flexibility there. But the trade-off is going to be, and it is going to be this, you will have to pay significantly, in many cases, higher management fees in an IRA as opposed to the TSP, which is the cheapest cost investment you can find. And I will paraphrase the founder and former head of Vanguard, which is a relatively cheap investment tool, that he said, you cannot beat the TSP in terms of low-cost administrative costs. So it's a trade-off. Life is a series of trade-offs.
Okay, so let's trade off to the caller. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, John. How are you?
Fine, how are you?
Listen, I have a question about partial withdrawal from TSP. Can you do that? Can you, like, if there is no penalty consideration because you owe more than 59.5, can you take like half out and leave half?
Yes, you can. One time only. You can take a partial withdrawal of any amount you choose.
Okay.
And leave the remainder in the thrift savings plan. That wasn't always true, but that changed a few years ago, so you now can do that. But I should add about the penalty, since you mentioned it, if you leave the federal service, let's say retire, in the year you turn 55 or later, you will never incur a 10% tax penalty, no matter how you withdraw the money.
Okay, could I ask you a question?
Yes.
To the caller.
Yes, sir.
Are you in federal service or are you retired?
Yes, I am. Yeah. And, I want to experiment a little bit, not completely, but take some of it out and maybe try in things because they are not available in TSP,
Okay, but remember, when you do take the what you're suggesting is something called a partial distribution. You're not taking the whole money out. You have one shot at that.
Yeah.
And you will have used your one shot.
Okay.
So that when you do retire, be aware of that. But since you did ask the question, I'll give you a remedy.
Okay.
When you do retire, if you wanted to take out partial on occasion, elect the series of monthly payments. There's two. There's one where you tell them what you want. The minimum amount that you would have to take out is $25 a month. So again, we're going with that you took out your partial while working, and then in retirement, you'd really like the money in the thrift. I'm not saying you do, but let's just say that you do. And you would like to keep it in there, but you would like to have access to it on occasion. Take the monthly series at the minimum amount of $25. Then you're telling them what you want. So on occasion, then, you could say, I want to take out $500 a month.
Ah.
And then after you've paid down, then bring it back down to $25 a month. So in other words, you were able to go in and grab a chunk of change, leave the rest there, but you weren't stuck with it. Does that make sense?
It is beautiful.
Yeah, because, and the point is for our other listeners, just because you take a partial payment, the whole point that Bob was making is the next time you come after the remainder of your money, you don't have to take it out at one fell swoop. In fact, you can keep most of it invested and growing by doing the minimum $25 a month. And now you can change that amount up or down once a year,
right?
If you need to.
Well, it's really a beautiful show, and I enjoy listening to it every week. When are you going to have Tammy next time?
She'll be on next week with Greg Long, the director of the TSP, and Kim Weaver, the director of external affairs. And I don't know the tax attorney's name, but I think I'll know it well by the time next week's show is over.
Listen, you guys do a wonderful service for the federal community. I appreciate it.
Thank you, and thanks for the call. All righty, so we were marching through this, and we were talking about, after leaving federal service, what could you do with it? But let's talk about the person maybe isn't beginning career that comes in mid-career from outside. And let's say that individual had from private industry, had a 401k plan. Could the 401k plan be transferred into the TSP? And the answer is
yes. It can. So if you have a Roth 401k sitting out there, you could transfer it into the new Roth TSP as well.
Okay, but can you transfer a Roth IRA
into the TSP? Yeah. Roth? No, you cannot.
Very good. So it's people remember that comment. So the Roth IRA can be the recipient.
But not the TSP cannot be the recipient of a Roth IRA.
So again, if we're coming in mid-career and we have a 401k in our background or they have other type, I don't want to use IRS code section numbers, but they may have worked for a county or a state government. They can't have 401ks, but they can have other things. Whatever they had, they could transfer in if it mirrors the image of what a 401k is. By the way, what is 401k? People say, what is that? Internal Revenue Service Code Section 401, little paragraph K, basically says all salary income is taxable, except for the amount that an employee would take from their compensation and put it into an employer-sponsored savings provision.
Yeah,
that's all that it says.
It's like the private sector version of the traditional TSP.
But people get hung up with numbers and they say, why do they call it a 401k? Why do they call it a TSP? The TSP, oddly enough, is not a 401k, but we don't need to know code section numbers.
But it acts like one.
It walks and quacks like one. Yeah, and that's all we need to know is it does the same thing pretty much.
Yeah.
Maybe not exactly, but pretty much. All righty, so we're talking about money in and money out when we leave, and based on that caller was great. And it also...
That's an important question. That
but
he asked.
And the idea of the first caller with, is it too late to do? I think it's actually a good thing to do, because if somehow they had a Roth IRA from the past or they could get one, the holding period has to be 5 years. So let's say that the individual that called first could only put it in for 3 years. Well, they wouldn't meet the five-year test, but if they move the money into a Roth IRA and it had met the five-year test in the 59, then it gets that piggybacked onto it. So in other words, it wouldn't have to meet the five-year test on the Roth TSP. Now remember what I said relative to that person's Roth IRA. I didn't say it didn't have to meet the five-year test. It doesn't have to meet the five-year test if it goes into a Roth IRA that has met the five-year test and the person is 59 and a half or over.
Or a combination thereof adding up to five?
It has to be at least 5 years. One of them has to have been in the investment at least 5 years, whether it's Roth IRA or whether it's the Roth TSP. But in her case, the Roth TSP couldn't have been 5 years. It could only have been three. But if it was moved into a Roth IRA that had met the five-year test.
But she says she's 5 years away from retirement. She didn't say how old she was.
Right.
Yeah.
She sounded young.
And she sounded like she was from the Midwest, too.
I guess that's good.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm from the Midwest.
I wouldn't have never guessed that. Yeah. All right, let's get back to some of the other issues here. Is there a mandatory distribution of the money in the TSP? Okay, let's take the traditional TSP first. All right, so do you have to take the money out? You don't have to take it all out, but once you hit 70 and a half, and, underline the word and, you've left federal service, then you have to start to take it out. It's called a mandatory distribution. Why? They want to tax you before you go. Let's say you're still on the job at 75. They don't bother you till you leave federal service. Let's say that you're on the job at 58. They don't bother you till you're 70 and a half. The amount that you have to take out is very small as a percentage of the total of the money in there. So the term mandatory distribution sounds a lot rougher than what it is.
Yeah, you can think of it as a minimum distribution requirement, as it's sometimes called, isn't that?
That's exactly it.
And they're very minimal, as you point out.
Yes. Okay, now let's switch over to the Roth TSP. Remember we did the traditional TSP first in our example. Have the same situation, but there is a mandatory distribution, minimum distribution requirement that we just mentioned that would extend to the Roth TSP. And some of the listeners are saying, I think that's wrong, because with regards to a Roth IRA, there is no mandatory distribution. Well, they are right. So there is a difference between the two. So if you do move it into a Roth IRA, be aware that you'll have a non-mandatory distribution issue, whereas if you leave it in the Roth TSP, you will. So again, we're just moving up a little bit, still within the basics, but things to watch out for. So investment choices, they mirror each other. They follow each other in lockstep. And some would say, that's great. And others would say, that's not great. Now, the ones that are saying that's great, they go, listen, you know, I've set my investments and I think I want to mirror that. A financial planner in here might jump across the room and strangle me and say, no, you want more. You want to be able to choose your investments in one different than in the other. Well, you can't do it.
Yeah, you can't do it, so don't sweat it. You just can't do it under current rules.
And I was reading some emails and saying, well, gee, if I did this and X and Y, Z happened, I'd wind up having to pay tax on, well, yes.
Yeah, I'm sure the folks can elaborate on this week. I'm just asking, maybe it's the reason you can't. What do you think? Is it just for administrative reasons?
I think, one, it's administrative.
Or is it a tax thing?
It's not a tax thing. Yeah. It's one, it's administrative. Two, it's so that nobody could say the reverse. I don't know what to do, and now you're forcing me to make two sets of decisions when all I had to do was one. So it meets somewhere in between the two, where it's a little bit the both.
Yeah, well, it does simplify things, at least.
It does. Okay, so we got about 11 minutes left, and I don't want to start necessarily wrapping it up, but let's really zero in now, because we were bouncing around between IRAs and TSPs at the beginning, and now we're fully focused on the TSP. The Roth is open today. Is it a good idea to do it? I don't know. It depends on some of the things we talked about. I would say maybe more so than not, but if you do it, be aware that if you were maxing out or close to maxing out currently with your traditional TSP, you're getting a tax benefit for it. If you choose the Roth, you're not getting a tax benefit for it. So the money's got to come from someplace to pay. Remember the Piper. You're going to pay them sooner rather than later. In this case, if we do the Roth TSP, we're paying the taxes up front. So we may not be able to put the full amount in that we used to, because we've got to pay taxes on it. And what does that do to the growth dynamics? Well, the less money you put in, the less money it's going to grow. And if you step back and look at the growth dynamics, if you put the exact same investment inside of the Roth TSP and the exact same investment inside the traditional TSP, which you pretty much have to, at the end of whatever period of time, they're going to grow to be the same amounts, assuming an equal amount went in. There's no way that that's going to be any different. However, in this case, if we have to put in less because we have to pay the taxes, they're going to grow to be dissimilar amounts because less money went in.
Yeah. It's when my wife and I were both working for the federal government, if we'd had this Roth option, which we, of course, didn't, we were always, you know, had a fairly high tax bite, which I guess would have argued maybe would have just stayed traditional and get the immediate tax break but, you know, for a while our income didn't drop much in retirement. Now it's dropped a little, but below what it was when she was still working. So, you know, you have to, I think the basic lesson is one size does not fit all. You have to kind of tailor it to your tax situation, your income situation, and so forth.
Okay, let's get back to that income situation again, because I don't want to leave any misimpression. So if I was maxing out my traditional and I still want to max out my Roth, I can, but I'm going to have more withheld from my take home. And if I can afford that, great move. Maybe. Depends on what's going to happen after I retire. I cannot make any general comments that one size fits all here, because they don't.
Yeah, and I would see a tax professional.
And listen to next week's show.
Yeah.
And we will probably get more into the weeds with that. Now, getting back to with regards, is there's dearth of information on the net. Of course, the best place to go is our website, as well as Fed News Radio's website. But this gentleman, Jack Moore, wrote this column this morning, and it says, five things Fed should know about the Roth TSP. Let's take a look at it. So number one, what is the Roth TSP? Well, I think we hit that pretty hard. You know, where does the term Roth come from? That was one of the people up on the Hill who came up with these ideas years ago for Roth IRAs. So the name's stuck. It isn't anything really different than the traditional TSP, except for one huge difference. You don't pay taxes on the earnings, but you pay taxes on the money going in. So what is it? That's it. Now, also, it's quoted. There's a quote in here for one of the NITP family, Ed Zerndorfer. Actually, I left Ed a message this morning on his voicemail because I was uncertain of something, but John straightened me out before we went on air. But thanks for listening to my question, Ed. But anyway, take a look at this article. It's short, it's crisp. So that's number one. Now, I renumbered his, he had number two. May 7th is the launch date that will leave many Feds out. Now, what he's talking about there is all pay systems aren't ready to do this. I won't say all. There's one big one that isn't. It's DFAS. I'm not trying to point fingers, but yeah. You know, you don't want to be doing this if it's
DFAS
not gonna...
covers about half or over half the federal service. So, because it doesn't, it's not only Department of Defense, which is the biggest single chunk of federal civilian employees, but also they service other agencies as well, as I'm told. So apparently they will be up and running. I think it's June.
Three different dates. The Marine Corps will be able to participate in June. I guess you don't fool with the Marines. And then in July, VA, HHS, Executive Office of the President, EPA, and civilian DOD employees will be able to participate in July. I don't know if it's the beginning of July or the middle of July. And then in October, the services, Army, Navy, Air Force. So there could be a delay if you're within one of those groups, or better stated, if now, DFAS is handling your payroll.
Let's see. You may say, well, darn it, why couldn't I go in today, May 7th, like some other many other agencies under different payroll offices? Correct me if I'm wrong. I believe I read this. If I understand it correctly, the five-year requirement to leave your money in the Roth starts January 1st of the year you start putting it in?
Or could have put it in.
Could have put it in.
Roth IRAs. We wait until April 15th after the year is up to fund the prior year Roth IRA. The five-year clock starts January 1st of the year before.
So I guess what I'm asking is, does this delay disadvantage the DFAS people?
No.
No, that's what I thought I'd
read. But what it does is it disadvantages them because if they want to max, they're going to have to sit on that money. And then when it does kick in, they're going to have to put a lot more in than what they would have if they could have done it May 7th. Now, I'm not trying to throw gasoline on the fire.
True, but mid-year, if we're all up and running mid-year, as we expect, or as I say, there is plenty of time to adjust your contributions.
I know, but there's food and mortgages to pay, so they'll just have to put that money aside so that the cash flow will be there when they have to jack up their withdrawal. And then another question of the five, who could benefit from the Roth TSP? And I'll just read it. Many financial analysts consider the Roth option a good deal for employees who anticipate that they will be in a higher income tax bracket in retirement than they are presently. This means the Roth option could be particularly beneficial for younger Feds. We talked about that. And then another option or another question to ask is, how did the Federal Thrift Investment Board prepare for the rollout? Well, they've been preparing for some time now. They've been on the show. They come on at least twice a year, and we talk, you know, how's it going? And, of course, they're not going to tell us everything. But they've been at it for close to 3 years.
Right. The law was passed allowing the Roth in 2009 with some other things.
Picture the programming for that. Yeah. I just can't imagine. But so that's why.
Which is always a problem for any federal endeavor or any probably private sector endeavor is getting the computers right.
All right.
The programs right.
And number five, it says, where can I find out some more information? Replay the show or go to the TSP's website. got a great website. They even have a video on this. And they have a side-by-side comparison of the Roth versus the traditional. We'll be banging the drums on this on occasion, certainly these two. It's up in the air whether we're going to do a show. It would not be 2 weeks from today. It could be 3 or 4 weeks, or it'll be nothing but call-ins. And we'll just sit here and we'll say, you call, we'll answer. But nothing like today where we explain, or nothing like next week. And I think we might do that, but that won't be for another 2 or 3 weeks. All righty, so I think we've covered this, and we've got 2 minutes, Andrew tells us. John, you got any final thought processes here or any slick moves?
Well, what you just said is TSP.gov has information up there on the Roth versus traditional right now. And I think all Fed TSP participants got that information in the mail, some useful information about the comparison in the mail. I know I did, even though I'm a retiree, I still got it. But so go to TSP.gov and you'll find it very easily.
And if you don't find it, go to NITPINC.com and ask a question as to what rules there are. Don't ask us whether you should do this or not, because we don't know anybody on the other end of the email.
Right.
All righty, I'm getting the high sign now. We've probably got about 30 seconds to go. So thanks for listening. Please tune in next week. And remember, this show is archived 24/7 on NITPINC.com, where we will have the director of all this, external and a tax attorney. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.